Accession number 11970, reel 9.
Mr. Birtwistle, reel 9. We were talking about the period after the, you know, your involvement in the, in March.
Yes.
It's a bit vague, but after do you remember that. A Belgian spy incident?
That's
you,
right. Well,
what was that all about?
Yeah, well, we went up to Dunkirk. Dunkirk, and we were on some dugouts on the course at Dunkirk, and we had quick firing gun there for firing shells that they were to take charge of and use. And we were on the in this post, and our orders were that the colonel sent word around that we had all to have a get in the sea and have a wash, have a bath in the sea. So we went out in the sea, and there's a further along on the right of us, near a Newport, there was a French artillery, what is it there, on the coast, you know, what a guarding on the coast, for watching the channel. And they had, of course, the big artillery guns. Anyway, when we got in the blooming sea, and they're firing rifles, you know. So, of course, we had to come out, because, of course, they weren't trying to hit us, you know. They were only firing them just to warn us. Anyway, we came back in and we're back to headquarters, like they were firing at us. So they went up to see this battery and tell them, like, we're only going in for a bathe, you see. And they knew damn well they could see that, you know, we're going in for a bathe in the sea. Anyway, that was up at, Oost Dunkirk it was. And I think it was a big hotel. And they had a raised spire on one corner, and every time our troops used to move up of a night, they used to get fire, and and they wonder what it was, and they found out that it was a German spy, a Belgian he was, in this spire, and he was signalling to the Germans. So of course they fetched him down and took him outside and shot him. Well, now then, from there, I don't know. I can't remember really what. I know very well we went back up on the line, and we went in front of the Hindenburg line. We were in front of the Hindenburg line at the time. And, it was a rough, rough job there. Because we went out on patrol, and the wire in front of the Hindenburg line were about 30 yards deep and about a yard high. Well, there wasn't a chance in, you know, and suppose our artillery supposed to have knocked it down, you know, but there's no chance of knocking all that down, you know, or in front of the doing. Anyway, we were there, and we came out of the, we'd served our time in there. We came out, and we're behind, and I don't know whether it was that, but I know they got heavily shelled, and there were the Portuguese that were in the line, and the Portuguese left the line, and we had to go up and take the occupy the line, the, you know, where they'd come out again. And I know the trenches were in a disgusting state, because we had to clean them up, and the lads were carrying on about it, you know, about our own trenches being good, and then we had to go and clean other folks' trenches. Anyway, the following was it, the Portuguese came back again in the line, and we came out again when things had quietened down. And then that was the time when, oh dear.
You've got a story about the Prussian major who gave you some souvenirs.
Oh, well, that was when we were up on that Cambria, when we went up onto that, When we were advancing, that was after the advance had started, when we did the tanks, the 500 tanks came over, you know, and went over the Hindenburg line. And we went on after that. We carried on advancing after they took the front line. And that's when we came to Cambria. And somebody in this tank kept firing this machine gun, you see. So my platoon were in front of it, so I said, well, you keep firing. So I left the section, and I sent a section round on the right, and one we came round on the left, and I said, now keep him occupied, make him think that we're still occupying the train, you know, all year occupying the trench, keep him firing. So they did that, and we came in from the back, because there were nobody else, only this blessed tank that were firing at us.
A German tank or an old British?
No, it was an old British tank. They'd been over in 1916. They were the first lot that went over. I think about five tanks went over in 1916, and two of them broke down on the hillside, and this was one of them. Well, this was 1918 then, and
they were just using it as a pillbox.
They were just using it for a pillbox, yeah. So I came in behind, and there's this German Prussian major, all this gun, you know, and he firing this gun. He wouldn't leave loose, and I had to strangle him off it. To, you know, I didn't shoot him because I thought, well, it run through my mind, what would I have done? I wouldn't, you know. I wouldn't have stopped there. Well, all these troops coming out, on me own, on me solid, you know. And I pulled him out of this one, I didn't push him outside of the tank. And one of our chaps were going to shoot him. And I said, no, don't shoot this fella. I said, if this fella wanted, he doesn't need a bullet, he wants Iron Cross. You know, I said, a fella like that, holding out like that on his own, he deserved Iron Cross. And so anyway, when we got all these prisoners together, because we've got a lot of prisoners, and the road where we were, stood on the top of a hill looking down, and this road, it seemed to be like the road was moving, you know, where all the prisoners were going down, the German prisoners were going down, and we couldn't send one, we sent one in about 100 prisoners. That were all escort, because we couldn't allow them, you know, we'd no troops hardly to go over. Anyway, this Prussian major, we're stood there, like, waiting to be sorting out for marching them off down the road. And I pulled my cigarettes out. And this Prussian major just looked at me, and he looked at these cigarettes as though he could devour one, you know. So I held them out to him, you see. And he sort of hesitated, like, reached for it, and then he pulled his hand back as though I were going to pull mine back and pull him away from him, teasing him, you know. But I wasn't. And I finished up, I took one out and gave it him. I said, here. And I lit it with a match, gave him a match, you know, took my match out and lit it. And, well, after that, he stood there. And I gave him a packet. I said, here, you may as well have them, I have plenty, like. And I gave him a box of matches with them. And he pulled this watch out of his pocket, because I took a dagger, a revolver, and a pair of field glasses off him. And them are armed, you know. And I gave him the watch back again. I said, here, you keep that. But after I'd given him these cigarettes, he pulled this watch out and he said, here, you. And I said, no, you keep it, like. But he said, no, if somebody else had taken it, if I didn't have it, you see. So, of course, I took this watch. Well, the prisoners kept asking me, let's have a look at that watch. Let's have a look at that. Well, they were passing it from one to another, and then finishing up, I got it back again. And when I opened it at first, it had his name and address and his rank and everything, you know, his regiment and his home address, and written in a little piece on the back, printed on a little paper in the back of the watch. But when I got it back after the job, that wasn't there. So it looked as though somebody had took it out and it happened, you know, right into his people or something. But I would have sent the watch back again, you know, if I'd had it. But that was it, anyway.
You went on leave round about that time.
Yeah, well, we'd been out, we'd gone on this and we'd been pushing forward, and we were that way short of men till they had us out on rest again. And oh dear. We were training for a special job anyway, to go over the top. And it was a funny thing, while we were there, now then, that, oh dear.
You were in a village?
Yes, and I can't remember what it was.
It's all right. What happened then?
Well, they sent for me in the company office, and they said, you show us what you can do with some good lads, now see what you can do with these. And they took my platoon off me, and they'd sent to each platoon in the company, and to send, I don't know when it was, but anyway, about 30 came to me, so I don't know when it would be. But from each company, they sent so many men, and I had about 30, 32, I think it were, something like that. And they said, see what you can do with these now. And they were all the ragtags and bobtails, because you can tell what they picked out, you know, from each company that didn't want, lads they didn't want. The old chaps, and I don't know what they were, colliers. Because I made one lance corporal. I said, acting lance corporal till I can get your name through, to take over. Like, well, if I weren't there, do you see? I don't know now. I've got it all mixed up somewhere. One thing happened and another thing. You know, so many things happened. Anyway, we're As we were there, a sergeant from Croatia who joined us, that I knew in civilian life, a chap called Alf Barrett. Well, we were going over the top the following morning, and we went up the line, and we took up our positions in these trenches. And I'd told every man what they had to do, you know, where he had to occupy, the place he had to go make for and haul out and everything else and prepare it for hanging on in case of a raid attack, you know. And this Alf Barrett, he was left behind on Newtless because they didn't send a sergeant up the line right away. You know, if he just joined you, they kept him behind till he got sort of it worked his way in, you know, and got sort of he was down the line, and they always keep him behind so they get used to the you know everything that's going on more or less, so they know what's going. Because it's a job of its own, it's going up the line, and what is it? So, anyway, we're all stood to, and we're going over the top at 5 o'clock, and at 5:10, of course, the barrage opened out. Our barrage opened out, of course, well, when our barrage opened out, Jerry's barrage opened out onto our front line, because they always open out on the front line, because they know that you're going to advance from there, you see. And then, after that, of course, our artillery, whenever we were going over the top, when we go over the top, they advance, they lift the barrage and onto the second line then, you see. But anyway, we're stood to, 5:10, barrage opened out. When who comes up the line but Sergeant Barrett? I said to him, I said, Alf, get down that the line. I said, you're not supposed to be up here. He says, it's not me, it's not supposed to be up here. He says, it's you. He says, here you are. He says, your leave papers. Go on. Well, I just said to him, I said, Alf, I said, don't need to bother about anything. I said, you've got to make for that point there. I said, your men, they're all organised. They know what they're going to do. I said, now, all that you could do is that. I said, the officer will be with you, you know. And I said, I'm away. And awful, I didn't bother going down the trenches. I were off over the, you know. He said, you've got to be at Railhead at 10 o'clock at such a place. And I forget where that were now, was Jove.
All right.
Anyway, I got down there for 10 o'clock, but how I got there, I don't know. Believe me, it was just hell let loose, you know, naturally, when going over the top. As I said, the firing at the back of the line to keep the supports down, you know, so you're catching both the front lot and the back lot. Anyway, I got down to the headquarters, and I don't remember, you know, I can't remember getting on the train or anything. I don't know very well. I got on the train, and how I got home, I don't know. But it was a peculiar thing, because when I got to Manchester, there were no more trains that night. And I thought, nothing. I drove home to Tolland, I'd be home that night. Or I'd phoned up to say I'd be at home that night. And I looked all the trains in Manchester and asking, and the one went to Accrington. Well, I thought, now if I get to Accrington, I can go over at Black Moss. And I thought, Black Moss, it was like a bit of a bad place to go, because there's a lot of bog there, you know, and all that. So I thought, is there one gets to Burnley? And he said, yes, there's one here goes to Banktop Station at Burnley. So I said, right, that'll do me. So I went forward to Banktop Station, got off the line, and when I was going out of the station, I said to a chap there that were outside, I said, nothing. I said, which is the best way to get to the Burnley Road, to Rottenstall? And he says, keep right on up this road. He says, it'll take you right up there, you know. So as I'm going up this road, I met somebody else, and I said to him, like, about going up to Rottenstall, this road. He says, if you take up this first road, I think he said, to your right, he says, it'll bring you out right up at, what was that pub? Bull and Butcher. He said, up at the pub at Bull and Butcher. So, of course, I took this road. I took this road and I was marching, I was walking and walking, back my blooming full pack on, everything else, you know. Till at the finish, you know, I landed at a farm on the top of the hill. So I knocks this farm up. And they're in bed, you know. Well, anyway, they come to the window upstairs. And so I said, could you tell me which way to Bull and Butcher? He said, Bull and Butcher? He says, who's sent you up here? I said, well, a chap down the road said, if you follow that road, he said, you come out to Bull and Butcher. He said, you see that light right across there? That was on the other side of the hill. You know, on another hill. He said, that light, that's the light at the back of the Bull and Butcher. Blinking at the moon, full then, you know. So I thought, right, I can manage this now. I can, you know, make a straight line across Hedge and Ditch, you know, Hedge and Ditch, right across the blooming, down in the valley, up the other side. And I get down in the valley, and of course the little stream running down there, and I got down to have a drink, you know, down in this doing, and all at once is someone jumps up, and I wonder what there's a blinking sheep down there drinking, you know. They didn't laugh at me, I tell you, took wind up me. Anyway, I filled my water bottle. I thought, well, I'll have a drop of water to go off me, because I an empty water bottle, and make my way up, and I got up to Bull and Butcher. And then I got on the main road to Crawshay Booth. And as I was going along on the road, the policeman caught me up from Cloughbridge. I passed Cloughbridge and then he come to Love Clough and then down to it. And anyway, he says, come on, he says, give us your, what is it? He says, have a second, what is it? And your rifle. He said, I'll carry them for you, and your gas mask. So he carried them for me as far as Cloughbridge. Well, then he lived at Cloughbridge, so of course he left me there, and I went on from there to Crawshay Booth. Well, it was 2 o'clock at morning when I got to Crawshay Booth, and my pal, he'd rung from home to say, come, Peter, because like early in the evening when I rang up from, I don't know where I rang up from, but anyway, to say I'd be home at night. But they'd rung to my pal. He was home because they'd sent him home with trench feet, you see. And we'd been together all the time, me and him. And he wrote and said, I'd be home. So he said, I'm coming. He was at our house. Anyway, when I'm going down the street, and I'd told him to get some hot water, for me to have a bath, because we'd no baths in then, you know, we'd to get the old tin bath in front of the fire. Well, of course, they'd gone to bed thinking I wouldn't be home that night then, 2 o'clock in the morning. Anyway, Lizzie, she heard me coming down the street, that's my sister, she heard me coming down the street, she said, Dad's coming, I can hear him. So, of course, they got the bath out, you know, and they had the bath in front of the fire when I went in. But anyway, I said, I'm not coming in the house because I'm lousy, you know. I took all my kit off and everything, threw it all in the coal place. We had a coal, outside coal place then, outside toilet, you know, in the yard. And I took everything off, stripped naked. I said, get me old clothes out, you know. And I said, I'll have a bath. So I said, you get upstairs. So I stripped in the backyard before I went in the house and threw all my things in the room. And I burnt all my shirts. And I bought some cotton shirt because the others weren't a lot of good that I'd left, you know. And when I was 16, like, only small, you know. Anyway, I know I bought some khaki shirts and cotton shirts and took them back with me. I used to wash my own when I got back. I wouldn't take them in, you know, when you go in for a bath, they used to throw a shirt at you, you know, and shorts and that. And I said, no, I don't want any. I'll wash my own. So I used to wash my own, you know, each week.
Did you enjoy your leave?
Yeah, the fortnight there. And that's when, did I show you? I showed you that photograph of me and my dad, didn't I? When we went to Burnley to see my Uncle Billy and all what his family like. They did, of course, they had to show me off, you know.
See, your family were proud of you, were they?
No, four of us. Four, my sister and my father and mother, that were all. And they used to, you know, took me to Burnley to show me off, like, I suppose, you know.
Did people know what you'd been going through?
I mean, no, they didn't know. They didn't know idea at all. They hadn't, no.
Did you try and tell them, or did you just leave it be?
No, you didn't try. I never tried and tell them. I said, well, you can't explain. You can't. You couldn't imagine. It's no use trying to tell anybody. I mean, you say, what have these people gone through now? These Iraqis. You know, they must have gone through hell. Because it must have been five times worse than whatever we went through, I'm sure. You know. All that lot. Anyway, we... I know I went down into Rawtenstall two or three times, but once I went down and the woman, she said, oh, have you come from France? I said, yes. She said, did you see my son? A woman just meeting a woman. I said, what's his name? I said, what regiment is he in? And this, that and the other. And she did tell me. I said, well, I said, I can't. You know, I said, I've been all over. You know, can you imagine me being in France? I said, it's like going through England. I said, you know. I said, no, I'm sorry. But Mrs. Smith, you're called Smith. And then one day, that would be the 11th of November, wouldn't it?
Hang on.
Oh, no.
You went back from your leave, didn't you?
But wait a minute. When I were... Oh, yes, that was at Christmas then, was it, when I were on that, weren't it? When I went to... oh, dear. Yes, I went back after my leave and we went over the... I don't know when to...
I think we'll draw to an end on that part of it.
Yeah.
On your military service, was that the time you were made Company Sergeant Major?
Yeah, well, when I went back, I was made Company Sergeant Major. Immediately I went back on my holidays, August.
And how old were you then?
I was 20, and I must have been 20 because it was in 1918, wasn't it? 18.
So you'd be 20, yeah.
I will be 20, yeah.
20 and 60.
On the April.
And 5 months, yes.
That's right, yes.
Did it give you a lot of more. I mean, you were invalided home in October with your knee.
That's right. Yes.
Influenza. Yeah. And all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Before that, I think that's enough. How did you? Did it mean a lot of extra responsibility being company sergeant?
Oh yeah. Well, of course. You see, you've four platoons then to see to. I mean, you have all the company, all the different companies. You know, you've. Not the company, but all the platoons. You have four platoons, you know. Well, they reduced it, didn't it, to three? I think you were three platoons to a battalion then.
And what was the job? What did you have to do?
Oh, well, you had to see to... You know, instruct... Well, instruct, you had to instruct. All the sergeants, you see, a platoon of companies and the sergeant majors, you had to tell When your company sergeant major, rather, you've got all the platoons to see to. You've got to see to the discipline of the whole company, you know. It's your responsibility, discipline, you know, and see that everything goes on, you know.
That was the main part.
That's right. Yes. Oh, yes.
Did you enjoy the work?
Well, I did. I always enjoyed army work. If it were army work, it were me. You know, I don't know what you can tell. I mean, to say company sergeant major at 20, I must have been interested, wasn't I? I was thoroughly interested. But I mean, in England, you see.
Hang on, because we'll be coming on to that. We're leaving the rest of the war, 1918, because it's obviously a bit vague for you now, the rest of it. So you eventually got influenza, didn't you?
No, I got...
Or was it your knee?
It was, what is it, bursitis on my knee here. This left knee, it came up in the lump on my knee, and I couldn't walk, I couldn't put my foot down. And he said it was fibrositis on my knee. Well, of course, when I went down to hospital, they put in a splint, and then sent me home, because, I mean to say, then we were advancing, you know, and advancing, they weren't, and I think it were all through marching over ploughed fields, you know, walking over ploughed fields and whatnot, that brought this on, really, I thought so.
Was it connected with what you'd had before?
Big man.
Was it connected with what
you'd had before? Well, I should imagine so, because I had fibrositis all through my spine, you know. Do you see, when they cut me out of the line, of course, I was always susceptible to rheumatism all my life, because when I was 11 years old, I couldn't put my own stockings on, you know. I was in bed one morning, the doctor came and saw me, and he said, out of that bed, come on, get up, he said. And he said, get on them moors, he says, and if it hurts there, shove it further. He said, don't let it get into your system. He says, keep it working. And I did all my life after, and every now and then I've always like been trouble with, like in the home guard, when I was in the home guard, I had another relapse then, and that was in, and I was coming to sergeant major then.
So
you know.
You were sent back to England. Which hospital did you go to?
Birmingham. One in Birmingham, and I forget what it was, because it was it had been an asylum, and it was a funny thing, there were 60 beds in there, and they were all colonial troops, you know, Australians, Canadians, and New Zealanders, and I was the only one, and I was in the fourth bed from the top on the left-hand side. I remember it to this day, it was so... What it, because the fourth bed down, and the chappie next bed to me, must have been a humorous devil, he said to me, he said, are you British, Tommy? I said, aye. He said, and are you a sergeant? I said, yes. He said, well, he said, there's been two sergeants in there since I've been here. He said, they've all both died. He said, two British, well, they're all British Tommies. I said, you're a comical bugger, you know. I said to him, two or three days, I weren't long there when they took this splint off. I forget how long I was there anyway. But they took this splint off and they'd stand up, and of course I put my foot down and tried to stand on it, and I went full length. But of course when I got used to it, I were all right. And I was knocking about in the ward. And the sister said, well, we'll put you in this little private ward at the top here. There were only four of us in there. And every morning we'll bring you a cup of tea and you can get out of bed and you can help these nurses. Because there were only, I think, there were two nurses and a sister in the 60 in the ward. And she said, you can get up and give this nurse a lift with the beds. And I were making, helping her to make 60 beds, you know. Anyway, I weren't there long because the doctor said, oh, she, I think you're all right, you can go home and go on convalescent. Anyway, the sister of the unit come, she said, you can make yourself useful if you will. And I said, well, what do you want me to do? And I were going around putting hot fomentations onto fellas' legs and wounds, you know, that had a bad wound, you know. And I know this one, they were an Australian, I know his leg, it was shattered, it was terrible. A shell had burst against his leg and it had blown all the, almost bare, you know, down to the bone almost. You could see the bone in places. And I used to go out and take a towel and put it in boiling water, and then I used to have to get another towel and wring it out in this other towel and then bang it on his leg, you know. And they used to say, oh, can't you get any hotter than that? You know, but, oh, I thought, God.